Ever get that feeling like you could just spot a problem from a mile away, even if, you know, you're not an expert? Well, I could have told him that.
Yeah.
But turns out, in the legal world at least, it's not always that simple.
Right.
So today we're diving into a case, Asplund Manufacturing Division v. Benton Harbor Engineering. And this thing went all the way up to the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, all because of one guy's testimony.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it really kind of makes you think about how we think about, like, I don't know, common sense in court. Right?
Yeah, totally. So this case, it's a wrongful death lawsuit that all comes from a pretty tragic accident involving an aerial lift that's used for tree trimming.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So this whole thing boils down to a legal battle over, you know, who is actually to blame here.
Okay, so let's kind of lay out the scene for us.
Sure.
What exactly happened and who are the, like, the main players in this whole drama?
Okay, so the accident, it involved a city worker. His name was Jeffrey Sackerson. And tragically, he died while he was operating one of these Asplund aerial lifts.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and the real culprit here, the thing that actually caused the accident, was a hydraulic cylinder that was part of the lift, and it failed.
Mm.
So Sackerson's estate, they sued Asplund, the company that actually manufactured the lift, and they claimed Asplund was negligent, basically.
Okay.
And then things get even more complicated because then Asplund, they sued Benton Harbor Engineering, and they were the ones that made the cylinder, and they were seeking what's called contribution.
Okay.
Which basically means they're trying to get Benton Harbor to shoulder some of the blame and some of the cost.
Okay, so it's like you break it, you buy it, but then wait, maybe somebody else broke it.
Exactly.
Classic product liability situation.
Yeah, you got it. It's like someone gets hurt and then all the companies involved, they kind of start pointing fingers.
Yeah.
But you mentioned this case like really hinges on this one witness. So who is this Michael Jones and what was it about his testimony that sparks so much controversy?
Yeah.
So Michael Jones, he was Asplund's star witness. He was the fleet maintenance supervisor for the city where the accident happened. So this guy, he had over 10 years of experience working with these lifts.
Oh, wow.
So on the surface, it seems like, you know, he's a pretty natural choice for a witness.
Right? He's the guy that knows how to fix it.
Exactly. But here's the catch. Jones, he didn't have any formal background in metallurgy or hydraulic design. You know, yeah. He was a practical guy, a hands-on type, not a scientist or anything like that.
Right. So he's the guy that knows how to fix the thing, but maybe not like all the science behind why it broke in the first place.
Exactly.
That could be tricky.
Yeah, and that's exactly what Asplund had him testify about.
Really?
Based on his experience, he believed that Benton Harbor's design of the cylinder, it was to blame for the whole thing. And he attributed the failure to something called metal fatigue in the piston rod.
Okay.
So pretty technical stuff.
Wow, and did the jury actually buy this?
Well, they did, yeah. The jury found Benton Harbor 20% at fault, and that ended up costing them over $185,000. But Benton Harbor, they were not happy about this. They appealed that verdict, and their whole argument was that Jones's testimony, it shouldn't have even been allowed.
Oh, okay, so this is where we get into the nitty-gritty of, like, lay testimony versus expert testimony, right?
That's it.
So, can you break that down for us? Like, we're first-year law students, you know, like, we haven't even cracked open our evidence textbook yet.
I gotcha. So basically, anyone can be called as a witness to testify about things that they, you know, they saw or heard or experienced firsthand. That's basically what lay testimony is. It's based on your everyday observations.
Right.
But when you start getting into opinions, that's when things get a little bit more sticky.
Ah. Okay.
And there's this thing called the Federal Rule of Evidence 701. And that basically lays down the law on what is considered an acceptable lay opinion.
So there are rules. Like, you can't just come in and spout off about whatever you think.
That's right. So Rule 701, it says that a lay opinion, it's okay as long as it meets these three conditions.
Yeah.
So number one, it has to be rationally based on, you know, what the witness actually saw, heard, or experienced themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, it has to actually be helpful to the jury in understanding the witness's testimony or in, you know, figuring out a key fact in the case.
Right. Makes sense.
And here's the real kicker. The opinion, it can't be based on, you know, scientific, technical, or other specialized knowledge. That's where you need an expert witness, and that's a whole other ballgame. That's Rule 702.
Okay, so, like, basically, you can tell the court what you saw,
right,
but you can't play armchair scientist unless you've actually got the degree to back it up.
Exactly.
Oh.
And that's exactly what Benton Harbor was arguing, that Jones's testimony about this whole metal fatigue thing, it crossed the line, right? It went from being a lay opinion into expert territory.
Oh, right. Okay.
They were saying he was giving a technical opinion, not just like sharing his personal observations.
And so, did the Third Circuit agree?
They did. They actually reversed the lower court's decision, and they basically said that the judge should have stopped Jones's testimony from even going to the jury in the first place.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, but does that mean anytime someone tries to talk about something kind of technical in court,
yeah,
they automatically need to like whip out their diploma?
Well, not necessarily. The Third Circuit, they kind of emphasize that even when you're giving a lay opinion, you still have to have enough experience or specialized knowledge to really back up what you're saying. And so in this case, they were saying Jones's experience maintaining the equipment, it didn't automatically make him an expert in, you know, metallurgy or hydraulic design.
Oh, okay. So like practical experience is good, but just because you work on something every day doesn't mean that you're qualified to explain like all the scientific reasons for why it failed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's a really good way to put it. They weren't saying that his practical experience was worthless, but they were definitely saying that there are limits.
Right.
And so the court, they basically drew a line in the sand.
Right, right. Okay.
They said, look, this guy, he can't just come in here and give us a scientific explanation without the proper credentials to back it up.
Right, right. Yeah, because, I mean, I work on my car all the time, but that doesn't make me an automotive engineer.
Exactly. And that's kind of the point that the court was trying to make here.
Right. Okay, so that kind of sets the stage for us.
Yeah.
We've got this tricky situation where someone with a lot of practical experience, their testimony gets called into question.
Right.
So where do we go from here?
Well, that's a really good question.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we're going to dig into next.
All right. Sounds good. So stay with us, folks.
We'll be right back.
Okay. So the Third Circuit kind of put their foot down. You know, they said practical experience is good, but it's not a free pass to, like, become an expert witness.
Right. Exactly. It's really a wake-up call for lawyers on both sides.
Oh, how so?
Well, you know, for the lawyers who are presenting the case, it shows how important it is to, you know, really carefully pick your witnesses.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to rely on a lay opinion about something technical, you've got to be ready to show how that witness's experience actually supports what they're saying.
Right.
You can't just assume that because they work on something every day, they automatically know all the technical details.
So it's not enough to just say, well, this guy, he sees these things all the time, so he must know what he's talking about.
Right, yeah. You really got to connect the dots for the court.
Right.
You know, show why this person's hands-on knowledge is actually important to the specific problem in the case.
So no more assuming that just because someone, like, fixes a thing every day that they're automatically qualified to tell us how it broke or why it went wrong.
Exactly, yeah. And on the flip side, for the lawyers who are defending a case like this, the Asplund decision, it's like, it gives them more ammo to challenge lay testimony. Yeah, you know, we could see more motions to try and block certain testimony before the trial even starts.
Yeah.
And maybe even more appeals based on how these evidentiary issues are handled.
So this one case about a broken tree trimming lift, it's kind of opened up this whole can of worms, hasn't it?
It really has, yeah. And it goes beyond just product liability, too.
Oh, yeah.
Think about medical malpractice cases, right? Or any situation where you have someone who's, you know, not a certified expert, but they might be asked to talk about something that's pretty complex.
Right.
This ruling, it could definitely make it more likely for defendants to try and challenge that kind of lay testimony.
Interesting. So we could see even more legal back and forth,
yeah,
before a case even makes it to a jury.
Exactly.
Okay, but hold on. We haven't even talked about the dissenting opinion. Didn't some of the judges think that Jones's testimony was okay?
Yeah, that's right.
What was their reasoning?
So Judge Gibson, he wrote this dissenting opinion, and he made some really good points. He argued that Jones's firsthand experience, you know, like he saw the actual broken cylinder himself.
Yeah.
He thought that was enough for him to give a lay opinion.
Okay.
And he said that if there were any weaknesses in Jones's, you know, understanding, they could have been addressed during cross-examination.
Okay.
He didn't think it was necessary to just completely throw out his testimony.
So it's like a classic clash of opinions, right?
Yeah, exactly. The majority, they were worried about protecting the jury from, you know, potentially misleading information.
Right.
But the dissent, he was more concerned about, you know, making sure that valuable insights from people who had actual, you know, on the ground experience weren't being ignored.
So how do we reconcile these two ideas?
It's a tough question, Red. Like, where do you draw the line between common sense and expert analysis?
Right.
How much specialized knowledge does someone really need to have before their opinion is considered relatable in court?
It does seem kind of tricky. Like, if we set the bar too high, are we basically saying that only people with fancy degrees get to have their say?
That's a good point. Yeah.
And what about cases where someone's lived experience is actually really important?
It's a tough balance.
Yeah.
You know, we want to make sure that the jury is getting reliable information, but we also don't want to create a system where, you know, only experts get to be heard.
It really muddies the waters, this case.
It does. And it gets even more complicated when you consider the potential bias, you know.
Oh, right. Like with Jones being a Asplund employee.
Exactly. Yeah. The majority, they were concerned about that too. They pointed out that just because Jones worked for Asplund, his opinions might carry more weight with the jury.
Right.
Even if those opinions weren't really based on, you know, the level of expertise that you'd expect for such technical stuff.
So are we saying that just because of someone's job, their opinions might be more persuasive, even if they don't really know what they're talking about?
Well, it's definitely something to think about.
Yeah.
This case, it really highlights that, you know, it's not enough for a witness to just sound convincing.
Right.
Their opinions have got to be based on something real, on experience and knowledge that's directly related to the issue at hand.
Otherwise, their testimony could be thrown out.
Exactly. And that could, you know, that could really hurt the whole case.
So it's a high stakes game.
Mm.
What do you think is the most interesting part of this case?
Well, for me, it's the tension between the majority opinion and the dissent.
Yeah.
You know, the majority, they wanted to protect the jury from, you know, possibly misleading testimony.
Right.
So they were pretty strict about Rule 701.
Yeah.
But the dissent, I think they were more worried about making sure that valuable insights, you know, from people with experience weren't being silenced. So
right.
So they wanted to be a little more flexible.
So it's like, on the one hand, we want to make sure that the legal process is fair and accurate.
Right.
But on the other hand, we don't want to exclude people who have, you know, real world knowledge just because they don't have a fancy degree.
Yeah, it's a tough question for sure. It makes you wonder if we're, you know, if we're moving toward a system where you absolutely have to have an expert to testify, even in cases that, you know, seem like they're based on everyday observations.
And are we putting too much emphasis on experts? Maybe at the expense of, you know, people who have practical experience, but not necessarily the official qualifications.
It's a question that's going to be debated for a long time, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
We've spent a lot of time talking about this case, you know, from the legal side of things. But I feel like there's a bigger lesson here for everyone, even if you're not, you know, about to go to court over a broken piece of machinery.
I think you're right. The Asplund case, it really shows us that even though personal experience is important, it doesn't mean you can just start making pronouncements about really complicated stuff.
Yeah, it's like me saying, well, I've used this smartphone for years, so obviously I know exactly how the processor works.
Exactly. And I think it encourages us to really look at our own assumptions, you know, and to realize that sometimes an issue might need us to understand it on a deeper level or even, you know, to get an expert involved.
Right. So next time you're at a dinner party and you're about to launch into some big explanation about something technical, maybe take a second and think, could I actually back this up if I had to, you know, in court?
Exactly. Yeah. It's about being more careful and thoughtful about the information that we share and the opinions that we form, especially when we're talking about stuff that, you know, that really requires specialized knowledge.
You know, it's funny, this whole case, it makes me think about how easy it is to be swayed by someone who just sounds really confident and like they know what they're talking about, even if you're not, you know, an actual expert.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, we're bombarded with information all the time these days, and it can be hard to sort through it all and figure out what's actually true. And the Asplund case, it really shows how important it is to not just take things at face value. You gotta dig a little deeper, ask some questions.
Yeah, common sense isn't always enough. Sometimes we just have to admit that, you know, we don't know everything and be willing to listen to people who do have the expertise.
Yeah, and it's not just about recognizing who the real experts are. It's also about understanding that people's opinions can be biased. Like the court said, the fact that Jones worked for Asplund, that could have affected how the jury saw his testimony, even if what he was saying was true.
It makes you realize that every piece of information comes with its own baggage, you know, like someone's work history, their beliefs, even just their desire to seem smart. We've got to be aware of all that and factor it into how we judge things.
I think this case has been a really interesting look at how blurry the line can be between everyday knowledge and specialized expertise. And it also shows how important it is that judges make sure that juries are getting good, solid information.
And it shows how important it is to really think things through and be prepared when you're dealing with complicated technical stuff, whether you're in court or not.
It's been great talking about this with you today.
Yeah, me too. I think we've really gotten into the details of this case and learned some things that go way beyond just the legal stuff. And to all our listeners out there, we hope this deep dive has given you something to think about. Just remember, just because someone sounds confident, it doesn't make them an expert. Always be curious, always ask questions, and always look for the facts. Till next time.